Joe Porter's with us now, RNZ's sports reporter. Hi, Joe.
Kia ora.
Gosh, I caught the second half of that Super Rugby All-Picky final. It was a nail-biter.
Yeah, absolutely. And who would ever have thought that Matatu would even come anywhere near Chiefs Manawa, who had just been dominant all season, were looking red-hot favourites to go back-to-back titles. And I'd, you know, all but written off Matatu's chances. I thought, as far as sports results go, this was going to be a foregone conclusion. So they really surprised not only the Chiefs Manawa, but probably a lot of pundits too. And yeah, obviously, heartbreak for the Manawa on the stroke of full-time to miss the kick. Tanika Willison obviously had a great season, so I'm sure they'll rally around her. But yeah, Matatu stuck to their guns despite going down, and you know, I think it was 19 points deficit at one point, and still continued to try and play the rugby they wanted to play, which was, you know, to move it wide and move things around and try and run around the big dominant Chiefs forward pack. So yeah, look, a real shock result, but what a fantastic final and fitting for the competition that just needed to be a little bit longer.
There was that try quite late in the match too, and again a misconversion, but from further out or further towards the touchline. But that was a great try, and I remember thinking, ooh, and then the penalty right at the end as well. And yeah, I think there was some question marks over that penalty actually, so maybe there was some kind of unfortunate justice. Yeah, but what a great match. As you say, could have been longer. So, you know, it's a new competition. Are we going to see more invested in it going to the future?
You would hope so. The Black Ferns, you know, the top players don't have any games until July. So there's a big gap now between when any of the elite countries' women's players are going to get any top-level rugby. And, you know, they're all spread out all throughout the country. So it's really hard for them to get together and train at any sort of meaningful level, especially when you talk about scrums, lineouts, technical aspects of forward play in particular. So, yes, it needs to be longer. And to be honest, most of these teams had only had short periods of time together. They're not in full camps like the men's Super Rugby team. So these women are working Monday through Wednesday, assembling with their squads on Thursday, playing the game on Saturday, having a debrief quickly on Sunday morning before heading back to wherever they do their work, 9-to-5 type job, and having to do that week in, week out is pretty tough, and it's hard to build an environment and a culture. The teams did a great job of doing that, especially the Chiefs of Manawa. I've heard some great things about what they've been able to achieve there in a short space of time, but really, if the competition had even gone for another round, so each team played each other twice, I think some of the results might have been quite different from what we saw in the first round, because teams would have had a chance to gel. And I think that was one of the big complaints. And of course, these women just want to play more rugby. Hence why we're seeing a few players head over to Super W in Australia because they have a longer season.
An interview with Kristen Cottrell on Monday of the Blues, and really just interesting hearing her over the course of her career. Again, for everything you go through to try and get enough play, and often teams that are really mismatched between brand new amateurs you know, All Blacks, Black Ferns in a club side. However, the other thing that occurs to me is that when the Black Ferns sort of hit their nadir on their northern tour, they hadn't played for forever, you know, playing matters. Okay, let's move on to Super Rugby Pacific. And are we starting to see the lineup sort itself out?
Well, I think so. You're starting to see the teams like the Crusaders, you know, they beat the Blues at Eden Park in a rematch of last year's final. They're starting to show signs that they are hitting their straps after what's been a pretty turbulent sort of start to the season for them. But there are a lot of injuries around these top teams as well. The Crusaders, I think, have 7-odd All Blacks missing. They had to go with a sort of a please help SOS to New Zealand Rugby to get Scott Barrett out of his All Blacks rest week, just because they simply don't have any locks available to play with. So I think, yes, I think that we are starting to see the pecking order emerge. The Hurricanes had a big win on the weekend, but they yet to play the really, really, really top teams apart from that loss to the Blues earlier on. The Highlanders, well, the poor old Highlanders, they got thumped in their first three games playing the three top teams. Now they should probably get some wins under their belt. So, look, I think we are starting to see things take shape, although a lot of the squads, apart from the Chiefs, who are unbeaten and running rampant at the top, they're the only unbeaten team left in the competition. I think the New Zealand squads, the Blues, the Crusaders, even the Islanders, have some fairly big injury issues that they're going to have to manage for this first part of the season, and hope they can continue to pick up wins whilst doing so. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's your traditionals, the Blues, the Crusaders, the Hurricanes are looking okay, but they haven't really had big tests yet. The Highlanders have had a rough start. They don't have the depth the other teams do. And the Chiefs, under coach Clayton McMillan, who probably doesn't get as much credit as he deserves, are going all guns blazing.
All right. Where else are we going today, Joe? Oh, the Warriors. In the top four, we're not going to say those words, we're not, but the season's shaping up well.
Yeah, look, I mean, we don't want to put any jinxes on the Warriors, and there's not too many external expectations on them this year. New coach, a largely different roster to what they had. Players playing in positions that are new to the club. So it was all sort of a wait and see approach. But look, 3 wins from their first 4 games. I think they're at the top four, level on points with the teams that are in the top 2 and 3. You know, they have played some tough sides already and had some good wins. They've shown some, you know, a lot of mental fortitude to come from behind and beat the Bulldogs. They've done it over in Australia too. Sean Johnson's found some form, which is great to see. The crowd was amazing at Mount Smart Stadium on the weekend. It looked fantastic. And, you know, if the Warriors can keep doing what they're doing, which is simple rugby league at times, completing their sets, you know, making some smart decisions on the last tackle, making their tackles, they've got a pretty solid defensive unit. If they can kind of keep doing that, I think you'll find that they will upset a few teams that they weren't expected to beat, and you never know, they might sneak into the top eight, and that would be a really good achievement for them this year.
To the netball, again, looking like it could be a tight competition, which is always welcome. Who's making the early impression?
Well, the tactics have been really impressive so far. They've just won last night their second game in just over 24 hours, beating the Waikato Bay of Plenty Magic. Now, the tactics were last year a little bit underdone. They were missing a few key players, and they didn't perform as well as they would have liked, such the likes of defender Jane Watson. They've also done some good off-season recruitment. They pinched Alia Dunn, former Silver Ferns shooter from the Central Pulse, the defending champions, and she shot the lights out last night in Vangiora. I think it was 43 goals from 43, shooting at 100%, and the Magic just simply couldn't keep pace. So the tactics have shot to the top of the table in the early stages of the ANZ Premiership. The two Auckland teams, the Northern Stars and Northern Mystics, are both second level on 10 points. They look strong as well. And the Central Pulse defending champions have had a couple of tough losses, two one-point losses, another one to the Tactics just this week and gone. But they still have a fairly strong squad and look like they'll be there or thereabouts come the playoffs. But the Southern Steel have been very, very disappointing. They've really, really struggled this year. And it just goes to show that if you don't have a top-class shooter, you're really, really going to struggle.
Okay, to the cricket. And look, that was such a one. Should it have been such a one-sided match at Eden Park?
I didn't expect that either, no. I know that Sri Lanka were probably feeling a bit defeated after having this test series go against them, which robbed them of the chance to make the World Test Championship final. And the weather hasn't been what they'd probably like to be playing cricket in. But certainly the 198-run drubbing, I don't know if anyone really predicted that. The Sri Lankans just looked like they didn't want to be there. Henry Shipley, a 5-for-run debut, the Canterbury bowler, fantastic for him. Yeah, it was a bit of a lopsided match. It's hard to know what to make of it. What did you make of it?
I was really intrigued by his bowling action. Yeah, it was almost a little bit of Lance Cairns coming back in there. He's quite front on, and he's not wrong-footed, but it was a really unusual. I mean, it ended up doing the job, right?
Yes, it does look slightly strange, though.
Yeah, it is, which is unusual because they're so sort of trained these days and coached from such a young age. But an impressive bowler. And who's the other new bowler who had a good match there, the other quick?
Let me think of the one. Was it Blair Tickner?
Yes, Tickner. Yeah.
And he's looked really solid since he's come in, obviously. They're kind of looking for that Trent Bolt replacement. He's done fairly well. I like the way he plays, and he's sort of put his best foot forward, hasn't he?
Between those two, Ferguson, Jameson, we have got a stable of actually very tall, quick bowlers.
Yes.
And yet we sort of perceived at the moment, we're perceiving as that's being a bit of a weakness. We relied very heavily on Matt Henry and on Neil Wagner during this series. But the talent's there. Now, is that good news and a problem also for coach Gary Stead?
Well, it certainly is good news. And to be honest, it might not be such a huge problem for Gary Stead over the next few months at least, because the Indian Premier League starts and a lot of the Black Cap stars become unavailable. So it does give him a chance to, you know, blood some of these players we've just mentioned, give them a shot at playing international cricket. Admittedly, in the shorter formats of the game, they've got a couple of T20 series against Sri Lanka at home after this one-day series finishes, and then they head to Pakistan for a T20 series over there. Tom Latham's going to captain the side, Kane Williamson, Tim Southee, Mitchell Santner, there's various others in the IPL. So it'll be an interesting time to see what they do with the World Cup coming up at the end of the year, later this year. So, I think the Black Caps will be feeling fairly confident in their growing depth and the ability to bat a few of these players, and the way that these players have performed, considering it wasn't too long ago when they got well, let's be honest, hammered by England in that very first test, that everyone was thinking, uh-oh, we're not letting Trent Bolt play. Are we, you know, very much a spent force in test cricket at least? So there are some positive signs for the Black Caps.
All right, now I've got to mention Amelia Kerr's success in the IPL auction. It's always slightly uncomfortable referring to human beings being auctioned, but it can earn you a lot of money in cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Amelia Kerr, she's been a star for the White Ferns, you know, all round her. She just won the New Zealand Cricketer of the Year award, the leading women's player in the country. She, you know, she's very, very young still, and she's been through a lot, you know, with some of the off-field adversity she's had to overcome. She's had bouts of depression and struggles with her mental health. She's been open and honest about that at such a young age. She seems like, you know, someone that's gone through a lot, and possibly that's why she seems quite worldly and experienced, but very calm. And she's playing for Mumbai and the inaugural Women's Indian Premier League. I think it would have been just a phenomenal experience. She's continued to perform over there, even in the final. She took a couple of wickets and four overs and was sort of sent into bat when Mumbai were chasing their target, needing, you know, it looked like it wasn't certain, but it was a fairly good. And she managed to get 14 not out and just see them home, you know, fairly comfortably and without sort of breaking a sweat. And I think the experience, 50,000 fans in Mumbai, it would have just been remarkable. And Amelia Kerr, she just knows how to perform on the big stage.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, Joe Porter, RNZ's sports reporter.